from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's the six-month anniversary. And it's time to follow up. 6 months ago, Ansett, Australia's number two airline, collapsed and stopped flying. And shortly afterwards, there were a couple of rescue. It collapsed partly because of previous ownership had drained it of funds it needed to keep flying. Previous ownership included. Yes, Rupert Murdoch. How are you? How are you, sir? Can I freshen your orange juice? And then there was a resuscitation attempt because, you know, a lot of people were being thrown out of work and it was tough to fly over all over Australia. They tried to revive it. Now, 6 months later, almost to the day, ladies and gentlemen, Ansett Airlines, Australia's number two airline, is gone for good. That's about it for the 6 month anniversary follow up. The rest follows here on Hello, welcome to the show.
If I should ever bring you inside my life, I'm happier than the morning sun, and that's the way to say that would be. If I should ever bring you inside my life, all my life I was alone. Didn't think I'd find my part. Now I see there's joy inside your heart. Every day I search for the star that never was in the sky. Now I see this star. Happier than the morning sun, and that's what you said that would be. If I gave you a chance to come inside my life, I am happier than the morning sun, and that's the way it will always be. Ever since the day you came inside my life. Dum, 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 I love you. Thank you.
cima e tomba, jura, amargura no caroço. Goiaba quase de vez, mamoeiro dá um leite que fel, pitanga do céu, amor de maçã, debaixo do frio. Fudendo o mato, fruto do ato, ligado a resina de cajá, manga espada inchada. Eu sou do mato, brinquei com maturi, vou ficando por aqui nas costas da madrugada. Fudendo o mato, fruto do ato, ligado a resina de cajá, manga espada inchada. Eu sou do mato, brinquei com maturi, vou ficando por aqui, meu bem, me abraça e a lua.
See, I was in Melbourne on the in September 11th, so that was 6 months anniversary for me. Hello, from the edge of America now, from the home of the homeless, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the Le Show program. 3 weeks till that big opening. Oh, come on! It's the my little comedy film, Teddy Bear's Picnic, opening in L.A. and New York, March 29th. I'm telling you about it because you may not hear about it anywhere else, the way things are going, the way the Blitz is going. But now to the Mencken Watch. No, that's not a new swatch. That's, we try to keep track, statistically, of the empirical evidence relating to H.L. Mencken's hoary and oft quoted observation that nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American public, because it's so honored here in showbiz land. Well, here's the latest. The chair has been canceled. You may remember there were two, quote, reality, quote, unquote, type game shows that premiered this late winter, early springtime. One was The Chamber on Fox, long gone. And the other was The Chair, which actually was thunk up first, and which spawned a lawsuit when Fox said, hey, we're going to do something like The Chair, only it'll be The Chamber, and it'll be even worse. The producers of The Chair sued the producers of The Chamber, and both shows are gone. The question is, do the lawsuits continue? Because I think the Chamber people countersued the Chair people. No, these are not people made out of chair. So the lawsuit, as far as I know, still exists, but ABC moved The Chair, series where somebody is, do you really want to know? Somebody is strapped into a chair and tormented in various ways while asked questions. And the point was to answer the questions while keeping your heart rate below a certain level, or else you'd be disqualified and, of course, died. Hosted by, we'll save his reputation by not mentioning his name. ABC had the series on Tuesday, where it did so well that they moved it to Monday, where it died after one airing. Once on Monday night, and it's goodbye to The Chair. So, did anybody go broke underestimating the? Well, I don't know. They didn't do well. There's still five episodes unaired of The Chair. Unaired Chair. Look for them on eBay. No, look for them on some other channel ABC owns, probably. It will be replaced with a relationship reality show, The Bachelor. On the night that The Chair was part of the ABC lineup, ABC finished fifth place, behind even The WB. had fewer than 5 million viewers, according to ratings. Now, 5 million people is a lot of people, you know. But not enough to save the chair, apparently. The Bachelor, no information about The Bachelor. So we don't know if it qualifies for the Mencken Watch yet, but we will keep, you know, I will keep you informed, because so far, seems to, a lot of people are going broke underestimating, you know, we just started this with the XFL. That was $50 million down the toy for, I think, two organizations, one of which is struggling now. Did you know the World Wrestling Federation is in financial trouble? No, but I can hum it. Ben Affleck, who stars as author Tom Clancy's Caffeine Fay, has purchased a Beverly Hills area home for close to $3 million. The actor purchased a compound. Oh, that's interesting. A compound on 2.5 acres, built in the early 1920s. It includes a four-bedroom, two-bathroom main house, plus a guest house, separate theater, tennis court, and pool. The gated estate is reached by way of a private drive. Well, you wouldn't want a public drive into a gated estate, would you now? No, you wouldn't. Affleck's former home in the Hollywood Hills was listed early last year at 2.3, but was taken off the market. He's owned that home way back since April 1999. Hey, Katie Sagal, she starred on Married with Children, and she's the voice of Leela in Futurama, and a musician. Doesn't say her husband, so it's just some musician. Have listed their Encino home at $3.85 million. They bought it in 1997 from Kirstie Alley. At the time, Sagal, an animal lover, agreed to allow two lemurs owned by Alley to remain on the property. That's right. Alley owned lemurs. Not tree shrews, lemurs. Alley has a private zookeeper tend to them daily. The lemurs, Lucy and Ethel, may remain if the new homeowners allow it. Come on! Let's get together and buy Katie Sagal's house just so we can have Lucy and Ethel, the lemur. Maybe if we can change the name to Katie and Kirsty. How about that deal? I'll buy the place if you let me change the name of the lemurs to Katie and Kirsty. Built for entertainer Al Jolson in 1935, the East Coast traditional style home on 2.25 acres behind gates. Come out from behind the gates, Katie. Well, she is. Has 8 bedrooms and 3 fireplaces in nearly 8,400 square feet. That's 1.5 fireplaces per lemur. The estate also has a guest house, den, study, gym, pool, gazebo, and koi pond. Just keeping the lemurs from eating the koi, it seemed to me, to be more than it's worth, really. Oh, she played... She was on a canceled series as well. Actor John Stamos? Nah, just a parcel of land. That's not really what we're into, is it? We're into houses. Ladies and gentlemen, cause for concern in a decision narrowing Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable search and seizure, like they haven't been narrowed enough already? No, they haven't, apparently. Thanks to the California Supreme Court, the boundaries are moved in just a little bit. The California Supreme Court has upheld the arrest of a bicyclist. Dig the details in this now. A bicyclist who did not have identification when he was pulled over for pedaling in the wrong direction on a one-way street. The justices, ruling 6-1, said the methamphetamine an officer found on the bicyclist after the arrest could be used against him in court. The bicyclist was sentenced to 3 years for the drug charge after being stopped for a California vehicle code infraction punishable by a $100 fine. That followed up a U.S. Supreme Court decision last April validating a Texas motorist's arrest for not having a seatbelt buckled. A ruling that says police can arrest and handcuff people for minor traffic offenses. This is the second decision this year from the California justices limiting Fourth Amendment rights of motorists or bicyclists to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. It upheld a 1959 law allowing officers to arrest and search vehicle code offenders who do not have identification. Lesson? Carry ID, ladies and gentlemen. Just carry your little thing. Something. Keeps you out of jail. I know it's not supposed to work that way, but it does. And other straws in the wind, perhaps? Other just evidence of the world as it be. Drew Carey is mad at ABC now. Not enough that Ted Koppel is mad at them. Now Drew Carey is mad at them. He's fuming, according to the local dog trainer, over what he described as a threat by ABC censors to halt production of his series this week due to objections regarding the manner in which an episode poked fun at heightened airport security. You can't do that? You can't. The upcoming installment of the Drew Carey Show features the title characters Nitwit Friends. I love Nitwit Friends. Lewis and Oswald getting jobs as airport security guards. ABC expressed concerns that at least one character working in security be presented as competent. And, according to Drew Carey, suggested that the entire script would be thrown out if the producers did not obey. How about it, something even daffier? A sitcom in which a network at least one network executive is portrayed as competent. Nah, they'd never believe it. Quote, I've never had a threat like that from a network. Everybody was kind of in shock, said Carey, who's also producer on the show, adding, if you can't satirize authority, institutions, what's the point? Unquote. Drew, the point is the money. Ask Ted. Producers of the program agreed to amend some of the humor. A humor amendment was passed by the producers and proceeded with preparation for the episode. And with H for it as well. It had both preparation and H, which is scheduled to be taped today, Thursday, for broadcast next month. An ABC spokesman declined comment. I think the ABC spokesmen have their hands full. A network source said the network's concern was that it would be irresponsible to depict all airport security employees as incompetent. Irresponsible for a comedy show, ladies and gentlemen, to exaggerate the incompetence of airport security, you see. ABC is owned by the Walt Disney Company, which has a strong interest in the tourism industry. That would have nothing to do with anything, would it? There will be more about airport security later in this broadcast. I have a communique. I have raised for several years on this broadcast the question of why cold and flu season supposedly occurs in North America in the wintertime during the cold weather when everything we've ever been taught would indicate that the ideal environment for germs and maybe even viri would be warm weather. And I must say, I've been deluged by real bogus explanations for this. And I've tried to point out the bogosity of them on this broadcast. Now I have a correspondent named John, an emailer named John, who actually proposes something at least plausible. We've heard this thing about people spending more time indoors, and I keep repeating to people who propose that, talk to the folks who live in the South, where they spend all summer indoors with air conditioning, or they wouldn't be able to bear it. All right, but here John goes. He proposes that first, but he has the good sense to say something more cogent then. The major factor which increases our susceptibility to infection is the humidity. Cold air is unable to contain as much moisture as warm air, with the result that your delicate mucous membranes, dry out and cracked. The aforementioned membranes constitute a major defense system for your body against infection. All right. So, anybody have any comments about that? Send them here. But that's at least the most plausible, that's the closest I've come yet to hearing something that even gets past the grin test. Which, by the way, this following item does not. This is from the Washington Post. This is regarding Army Secretary Thomas White, who used to be at Enron before he joined the Army. And his job at Enron, among other things, was to pursue military contracts for Enron. He was advocating the privatization of utilities, gas, water, electric services at military bases. Services for which Enron would bid, don't you know? And now he's Secretary of the Army. By the time of a meeting with Enron's John Carr, a former Army officer who worked with Enron Federal Solutions, a nice name for a company, in its quest for military contracts, by the time of that meeting, according to Army Secretary Thomas White, see, they just go back and forth between the Army and Enron. But he said Enron had already decided not to pursue other military utility contracts. An Enron spokesman backed White's account, saying the company lost interest in the military business about the time its former president, Thomas White, became Army Secretary. Ladies and gentlemen, if you believe that, I got Enron stock for you to buy right here. They lost interest in going after military business about the time their former head became Secretary of the Army. This you can believe. Maybe Enron belatedly disclosed that it spent nearly $2.5 million lobbying the Bush administration and Congress in the first 6 months of last year. That was three times more than they originally acknowledged, and even the corrected figure may be wrong. Because the report may still be inaccurate, nobody from the company would step forward to sign it. And now, regular feature of this broadcast.
We're so sorry.
The apologies of the week. Not nearly as high-ranking in the apology department as last week, but, you know, you can't have a Billy Graham every week. How about, though, the commander of the war in Afghanistan, General Tommy Franks? He apologized. Opening a briefing this week, he started by saying, "First, let me say that our thoughts and prayers go out to the families and the friends of the service members who have lost their lives in our ongoing operations in Vietnam," unquote. When his mistake was pointed out to him at the end of his briefing, he shrugged off any suggestion that the fighting had made him think of Vietnam. "I guess it just comes with being an old guy," he said. Then he emphasized it was Afghanistan and apologized. All right, Russell Crowe, he roughed up a BBC executive at the British Oscars. Then, after a lot of press foo-foo in Britain, he called the award show director, Malcolm Gary, and offered to buy him a pint, apologizing. He'd furiously pinned Malcolm Gary up against a wall and called him an effing piece of S for cutting a poem out of Russell Crowe's televised acceptance speech. But now he says he's sorry for his inappropriate behavior and suggesting they meet up for a few pints of Guinness. And there will be no apology from NBC for Representative Gary Condit's wife. She had demanded one for NBC running a Law and Order episode about a politician and his missing aide. The show's producer rejected Carolyn Condit's appeal. NBC concurred. The episode carried the usual disclaimer, doesn't depict any actual person or event. The decision not to apologize came a day after Condit lost his bid for re-election to Congress. So he can't hurt NBC anymore, so they won't be apologizing to his people. In the Law and Order episode, a 24-year-old aide to a state senator disappears from her Manhattan apartment. The demand for retraction was sent to Law and Order executive producer Dick Wolf and to NBC attorneys by an L.A. law firm, an L.A. law firm, which represents Mrs. Condit. "It is undeniable," said the letter, "that the viewing public would identify Mrs. Condit as the wife depicted on the episode," which it calls defamatory. Once a retraction aired that apologizes to her on behalf of NBC, her attorney wanted the statement to be featured at the start of a Law & Order episode airing reasonably soon. Told that the studio and network had rejected the demand, her lawyer, Brian Rishwain, said, "We either go away or file a lawsuit." Okay. I'm betting go away.
Drama.
This is LeShow, and you know the Senate and the House have now passed, and the president has signed an economic stimulus bill, and just in time, because Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan has announced that the economy is roaring ahead out of the recession, if there ever was one. So, boy, don't we need an economic stimulus bill. Glad they argued for a long time about that. Glad they just thought of it to begin with, because apparently... This was a stripped-down economic stimulus bill. It had none of the tax cuts that were tilted toward the corporate and the wealthy spheres of the economy for job creation purposes that President Bush had initially insisted upon, because the Democratic-controlled Senate refused to consider it like that. President Bush is having trouble getting his first major judicial appointee through the Judiciary Committee of the Senate, and went public this week complaining about that, despite the fact that Republicans had played bottle up with a large number of Bill Clinton's judicial appointees, hoping to hold out openings in the judiciary until a Republican hit the White House. So now the Democrats are payback is a bitch. The presidential envoy, General Anthony Zinni, has been dispatched hurriedly back to the Middle East in the wake of renewed violence in the Middle East, despite the Bush administration's pledge throughout its first year that it wasn't going to get involved in detailed management of the peace process, so-called, in the Middle East. So some reversals of direction there. And this from Lloyd Grove's column in the Washington Post. Here's a vignette we will probably not see on ABC's broadcast of the Ford's Theater presidential gala held last Sunday. I'm quoting from Lloyd Grove now. When Stevie Wonder sat down at the keyboard center stage, President Bush in the front row got very excited. He smiled and started waving at Stevie Wonder, who understandably did not respond. After a moment, Bush realized his mistake and slowly dropped the errant hand back to his lap. Maybe time for another phone call from 41 to 43 next on the show.
Enduring leader. Hey, 43. Hey, just wanted to see how it feels.
41, this is a blessing that you called because... how what feels?
You know.
So I waved at Stevie Wonder. So what? Anybody could have made that mistake.
Keep telling you. Read your briefing books all the way through.
Okay, but well, you know, why wouldn't you put that little fact in the first couple of paragraphs, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not like I waved at Ray Charleston or somebody that's, you know, well known for being unsightless.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's not...
Everybody's treating it like, you know... like I challenged Christopher Reeve to play horse or something. I mean, I got excited. The music was real loud. I recognized the guy. I waved at him. Big deal. Tell you one thing.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
It didn't distract him. Yeah, he just kept right on doing whatever he was doing up there.
Anywho, look, that's not what I was calling about. Just wanted to know how it feels to... you know, suddenly be the flip-flop king of the Bush family after all the grief you've given a certain ex-president over the years about lips.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Yeah. I didn't flip-flop. You know, I might have flipped a little bit on a couple of things, but I definitely have not flopped.
Oh, please. Like the kids say... give me the break. You weren't going to get involved in the Middle East. And you just had to send General Zinni scrambling back there like he was Dennis Ross on a jet ski.
Who's Dennis Ross? That kid in the Olympics?
Clinton's Middle East troubleshooter. The guy your press secretary was accusing 2 weeks ago of causing the violence.
Right. I told Ari to cool it. You know, that kind of talk is counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sending General Zinni back over to the Holy Land, that's just something I had to do because Colin was pushing so hard. You know, Colin...
yeah, Colin's a good man.
Hey, he won a war for you. You know, all he's doing for me is telling me what... deep poopy-doop we're in all over the world and how we have to get in the middle of it just because we're a damn superpower.
Well, here is something to it.
Oh, hey, 41, you know, last time I looked, being a superpower meant you got to choose your own battles. Otherwise,
yeah.
I mean, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
Plus,
well,
less beside the point, we're not really involved in the Middle East. I mean, General Zinni is just, you know, kind of a cheerleader for the Saudi plan.
The Saudi plan,
yeah.
Please. You know, the pain in the royal behind the Saudis are. You remember how the king kept ignoring Barr on her state visit?
Yeah.
Treated her like a piece of furniture?
Yeah, that was pretty rank.
Yeah.
Took a lot of guts, though. You know, you got to give them...
they're just running a little PR offensive to cover for the fact that most of your evildoers were their citizens.
Oh, I know, but, you know... everybody's got to be from somewhere, you know, even evildoers. So,
you're involved in the Middle East, flip-flop number one.
Well,
flip-flop number two, you were steady as she goes on free trade, and all of a sudden you're slapping a big tariff on steel imports.
Listen, 41, honest, Lee, that was totally a Karl Rove deal. You know, I just went out there, said my little piece. Karl feels he keeps Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia happy until 2004. You know, he says it won't help our steel industry anyway. And so, like he says, the Europeans and the Russians and the Japanese have 2 years to sulk, and then you know, everything's back to normal.
A 30% tariff on steel is not free trade. Flippity floppity.
That's what Peter Cottontail does, right?
Hmm?
Flippity floppity down the bunny trail. The girls loved it when I used to sing that. No. It was hippity hoppity.
Son.
Yeah.
Look, if you hadn't bedeviled me all these years about the new taxes thing,
wouldn't
be bawling in on you right now.
No, you're not bawling. You're irritating, maybe, but not bawling. Guess what, 41? These are situations where I'm bowing to the superior wisdom of the people that you agreed should advise me. When you caved on taxes, you succumbed to pressure from the opposition. Whole different can of peas.
All right. Flip-flop number three, you signed an economic stimulus bill with no tax cut. You gave in to the Senate Democrats. You got rolled by Tom Daschle, who couldn't punch out a pig bee.
Okay, here's the deal on that. Yeah, I pushed real hard for the tax cut, yes, but I never said I wouldn't sign a bill without it. So, you know, in that case, you got a flop but no flip.
43, look, not trying to bust your cojones or anything.
Hey, you know, it's lucky you're not some Democrat saying stuff like this in public. I'd sick John Ashcroft on you.
Yeah, just trying to prove a point.
Yeah.
Flip-flopping's a bad thing when you're in a campaign and your opponent has done it. The rest of the time, it's as much a part of leadership as apple pie.
Okay, 41, I got you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I gave you too hard a time about read my lips over the years.
Yeah.
And if I did, I'm sorry. Maybe I had to walk a year and 3 months in your shoes to understand what you did.
Well, thanks.
Tell you one thing, though.
What's that?
I never promised I wouldn't wave at Stevie Wonder. You give mine my love, will you?
Sure will. Give mine to Laura.
Done deal. Bye-bye.
The wind. I will tell you everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, have you entered the digital wonderland yet? Speaking personally, I saw the Fox News Yak Show this Sunday morning. Man, did you see the Tom Ridge, the Homeland Security guy, was on a feed from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and it looked like they were playing a VHS tape of him because it was a digital thing. It looked so damn bad digital. At least 43% of local TV, and the show itself was out of sync. But aside from that, at least 43% of local TV stations plan to miss the deadline set 5 years ago to begin broadcasting digital signals, according to the FCC. The deadline was May 1st of this year. 562 stations have filed for permission to miss the deadline. Another 160 have not been granted permits to build their digital TV stations. 43% of the nation's 1,300 commercial TV stations will not make the May 1st deadline. The percentage will climb if several of the 160 stations without permits didn't file for waivers. TV stations cited legal, technical, and financial problems. The number of stations that filed exceeded industry estimates. So get that digital TV now, won't you? Speaking of digital stuff, Peter Chernin, head of the corporation that owns Fox, said, "We're in the business of raising a generation to think that stealing is okay." He wasn't talking about his own corporation. He was talking about people trading files, music files, and video files on the Internet. And similarly, at the Grammy Awards, Michael Green of the Recording Academy declared that music piracy is a life-or-death issue for the music industry. What he failed to point out, according to the Boston Herald, the music industry itself is turning music fans into digital pirates. Number one on March 9th Billboard Hot 100 chart of the most popular songs in the United States is Ain't It Funny by Jennifer Lopez, not for sale as a single. You have to buy the album for $15, or you could download an MP3 of the song. The unavailability of the number one hit as a single isn't an aberration. It's the new norm. More than half of the songs on the current Hot 100 chart have not been and will not be released as singles. The bottom line, according to Billboard's director of charts, Jeff Mayfield, is that singles is fear that, on the part of the record companies, that singles cut into album sales. There are record company executives who believe that if you don't put out a song as a single, then kids will buy an $18 CD to get the one song they want. Record companies have slashed the number of singles they release, claiming that they lose more money than they make. Mayfield suggested a simple solution: raise the price of a two-song single to $4.99, but that would lead to more single sales, which the major labels don't really want. At the same time they loudly whine about last year's decrease in music sales, they decrease or eliminate singles altogether. Other show business news: a mystery illness has overcome at least 100 guests who attended a pre-Oscar ceremony honoring scientific and technical achievement last weekend. About 500 people attended the dinner. Many became ill the next day. Some guests didn't show symptoms for several days. The total number of people sickened has not been determined, but according to the L.A. County Health Department, at least 100 were overcome. Oscar officials said it could be nearly 200. That's nothing compared to how many will become sick after Whoopi hosts the... Oh, please, that's so cheap. And some of Britain's top actresses are set to lose out at the Oscar ceremony this year, according to Britain's London Times, because America has been gripped by patriotic fervor and wants to reward its own stars. The 5,000 voters in the Academy are being wooed by teams of highly paid studio bosses and marketeers. Over the past few days, promoters have broken cover with a technique known as a ring of roses, phoning up old friends. A retired British director living in Los Angeles said he would complain after he was phoned at 11 p.m. by a former student studio executive who spent 20 minutes being rude about Gosford Park. He had forgotten I was a Londoner, as he dismissed Maggie Smith and Helen Mirren as little Englanders and worse, said the director, who asked not to be named. Oscar nominees receive rule books vetted by psychologists who recommend key phrases to be repeated during interviews for maximum effect. This is according to the London Times. This year's magic word, admitted one insider, is American. Everything has changed, and everything is so much the same. Ladies and gentlemen, next week on this broadcast, more tales of airport security. Didn't have time for it this week, but stay tuned. It will be here on this very broadcast at this very time next week. Because, ladies and gentlemen, there's still one more apology to be handled here before we say goodbye. The McDonald's Corporation is going to issue an apology and pay $10 million to vegetarian and religious groups because they're using beef flavoring in their French fries. 60% of the payment will go to vegetarian groups, with the rest going to groups devoted to Hindus and Sikhs, children's nutrition and assistance, and kosher dietary practices. They use beef tallow in the French fries. See, that's the deal. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at this same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network on shortwave. Yes, we got that at WBCQ, the planet, at 7.415 megahertz. And on your computer, around the world, whenever you want it, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be, just like honoring Americans at the Oscars if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Let's all wave goodbye to Stevie now. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.